All right, so this is take two.
Yeah, take two. We didn't clean the database out of registered users.
No problem.
Yeah, we were trying to re-register users that I had registered before, and it doesn't like that because, of course, it'll throw a duplicate key exception and say, this user already exists.
Sure.
This user ID already exists. So here we are driving load. Now, what's happening is all of these clients that we kind of showed earlier,
mm-hmm.
And they're scattered across seven benches here, are being booted up by Mercury. It's simulating a user interacting with the web app, just as a user would. Logging in, placing orders, doing trades, looking at their portfolio,
sure.
Creating new users, which is where my little bug was. And so all that's happening across these two web servers. But really what those two web servers are doing are going over WCF via service orientation to my remote server running the IIS-hosted business services.
Hmm.
And those business services are running over here. Let's take a look at this computer. And we can see with 100 concurrent users, this is a 4-proc AMD box, an HP Hewlett-Packard DL585, I believe it is.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's a 4-proc server. And with 100 concurrent users, the users have a 1-second think time. It's actually more than 100 real users that we're driving load with. Most users take a little bit more than 1 second per page visit, right, to hit the next button or hit submit.
Yeah.
But with 100 users, we're getting about 12%, 20% CPU load here. On our web service tier, on the web service host running an IIS.
Okay.
If we look at the web servers that are remotely invoking that service, we'll just bring up Perfmon here. I can log out of those sessions. And let's go ahead and launch Performance Monitor. And I'll just reconfigure this real quick and add some counters that I always look at when I'm tuning the system. Number one, CPU utilization. Very mm-hmm. important. Second most important counter, if you're doing a web app,
yeah.
is ASP.NET request queue. I could live without almost all these other performance counters, but I can't live without those two to do performance tuning. Request queued and CPU utilization. Very important. So I'm going to add request queued, and we're going to see these web service clients. One's here,
mm-hmm.
and we got a lot of boxes going on, so let's go ahead over to this one as well. And launch Performance Monitor. Where are we? And I'll config this the same way. Get rid of those and add my stock counter. These are actually 2-proc boxes hyper-threaded. These are x86 Intel boxes, Xeon processors. 2-procs hyper-threaded will show up as 4 here, of course. So I'll add my two favorite counters, processors and ASP.NET request queue. And request queue is important because it tells you whether your web user's in a wait state. As soon as you see request queue go above zero, you know users are waiting some amount of time for a web page to come back. At that point, requests are being queued by the system because there's not enough capacity on the back end to service them right away. Threads are in a wait state, and your users are actually now waiting for that web page to return. So that's why it's a very important counter to look at. But you can see these two servers are getting roughly the same load. And these are the web servers running the ASP.NET app, remotely invoking to the same business service host the business service layer that's talking to the database.
Okay.
We can crank this load, and we'll just keep cranking it. Let's add, let's say, 500 users now, all at once here. And let those crank up, and we'll see the load increase here on our web tier as these users spin up. Okay, you're going to watch the capacity happen. And because we've got the capacity, we're going to see our TPS rate. This is our TPS, 100 TPS, right? Because I've got a 1-second think time on my clients, my TPS rate, up until we hit a bottleneck, a capacity bottleneck, is going to roughly match the number of concurrent users. So we're actually doing now 500, almost 500 transactions per second. This bar going vertical on me is the throughput of the system, and that's good. You know, this is a nice, clean system, running well. The app is very well tuned, obviously, as a benchmark sample. That's one of its purposes, to show developers and admins, you know, how to build a WCF app and an ASP.NET app that has some good performance characteristics built in, a design template for high-performance apps. So we're going to see the capacity go up. We've got plenty of capacity still in these two servers. You can see that. But let's look at our web service host, because these both are talking to the same web service host.
Okay.
Okay, so this is our 4-proc box that's hammering out all the requests to the database, doing all the heavy lifting, and it's getting requests from both of those web servers.
Okay.
Right? So you can quickly see where our bottleneck in this particular physical deployment topology is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, when I add more users, what's going to cap out is this web service host.
Absolutely.
But my web servers are still going to have plenty of capacity with two. Right? Yeah. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's cap this guy out.
Okay.
And show you what happens. We're kicking along now with 589. And let's go ahead and run some more users. Let's add another, let's say, 300. And run those guys. And we'll see again, these guys are going to increase. We'll see the CPU increase up until the point that they're in a wait state for the web service host, which is going to be the bottleneck because it's doing all the heavy lifting and it's just one server servicing every request from both of these web tiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to see these guys go up. Our throughput will still increase. And we'll see that happen. This is our response times here in Mercury. This is showing how long users are waiting for a web page. You can still see we're well below 1 second per page.
Sure.
Right? We're still down here at about 0.0 seconds. And you can actually see that live by running the app. So let's actually bring the app up here and log in. This is the app under load. I'll log in as UID 89, you know, random user. We've got 100,000 users loaded up on our database right now.
Okay.
We got a real data load. And you can see, you know, this app is still really fast. I mean, even with now 900 concurrent users with a 1 second think time, in the real world, that would probably be well over 2,000 users who probably take 2 or 3 seconds or 5 seconds between requests. You can see this app is still running really snappy and nice and fast, even with that load on. And that's going to map out to the right response times. But you'll notice I'm now beginning to see my response times climb a little bit.
Ooh.
Right? Just a little bit up. Still below 0.2 seconds. Well under a second response time. But beginning to creep up just a little with this load. And in fact, what we'll take a look at now is request queue. I mentioned ASP.NET request queue. Let me highlight that for you. Over on this server. You see the white line down here? You just see it. I'm beginning to get a little bump here and there.
Yeah.
Where users are beginning to get into a little bit of wait state. And you'll see the same pattern over here on request queue. And I'm highlighting it here. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, not because I'm out of capacity on the web tier, but because I'm beginning to hit the 100% CPU utilization of my web service host.
Sure.
My single box. And we can really hit that here in a jiffy by adding maybe 200 more users. And we'll run those guys. Now we're going up to 1,100 concurrent users being driven from all these remote desktops. And we're going to see what happens here. And we're going to watch the response times. Our throughput is up to 848 TPS, 857 now. And it's looking to me like I could probably even add maybe another 100 users. But look at okay, now you can see the request queue. It is consistently, certain numbers of requests are now beginning to get queued, right? That white line down here.
Yep.
And we see that on both boxes because you're getting equal load. Okay, and that is because if we come over here, let me add another 200. We're not quite at capacity yet. This thing can handle a lot of concurrent requests. Let's add another 200 users to this. And that's because our single web service host is now at the 100% CPU. There's just no more. This thing has, you know, it's a fast machine. It's nice. It's not, you know, it's probably a 2-year-old machine, 1.8 gigahertz four proc machine. But it's saying, that's as many requests as I'm going to handle. He's doing everything to do with the database, all the formatting and all the WSDL, all the serialization that's going on with XML over the wire.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot going on this single box, and we're driving load from two web servers. So I want to show you something. I'm going to change the mode in WCF here.
Okay.
And we can see this got up to roughly 1,000 TPS. We're at 958. But we're beginning to have requests queued, which we'll see here live if I start clicking around in this particular app. See, the pages are beginning to be a little bit slower. Still not bad, but just a little bit slower. You know, but still running. Zero errors. That's always a good sign. And we'll do a bot. But let's do something here. And I'm going to go ahead and see if I can do this live. This isn't really meant to be done live, but we're going to try it live. We're going to live dangerously here for a second.
Good.
And you would never really do this live because we've got connections going that are active. But let's go ahead and just give it a whirl. And I'm going to edit the configuration of the web app that's running on two nodes. And I'm going to change this. Let me do one thing first. I'm going to create a new connection to a different type of service host. Okay? come check this out for a second. Right now, my WCF service is running in the context of IIS. It's an IIS-hosted web service, WCF web service. Another option with WCF is to do something called self-hosting.
I don't want you
Charles has to get a seat.
Well, I don't want you looking up at me.
Okay.
This looks weird.
So, Charles, the key thing here is we can run WCF services in a self-host program. That can be an NT service. It can be a console app or a Windows app. And we've created a self-host version of business services. Nice. And I've done it as a Windows app, as a sample app, so you can kind of see a lot of cool information. And I'm going to launch that right here. This is hosting the same service, same WSML, in fact, reusing the same classes. And in the start menu, that's going to be the business service self-host. I'm going to bring that guy up while we're still running under load. This is a completely different service host, okay? And you get some things in the Windows app that are kind of interesting. Perfmon's integrated in. You can add all your counters and see that directly here in the console. Mm-hmm. You can see your active nodes running. And right now, I think I'm just running one node of the self-host program, which is this machine. You can see error consoles and configuration messages. So a bunch of stuff going on that's explained in the documentation. But what I want to do is I want to reconfigure the web app to point to this guy instead of the IIS host web service.
Okay.
So we can do that here, but I'll do it over here to be clear. And I'm going to go ahead and say add connection to the web app. And this time, it's not WebSphere and not my IIS host. What I want is this guy right here, my WCF self host, and which I just booted up over there. And that's on 192. Right? And he listens on port 8002. As a self host, it's not a web server. You can put it on any port you want, but I don't want the ports to conflict with the web server right now, so I have it on 8002. I'm going to go ahead and add a connection. Okay. And now I'm going to go back to my connections tab, and you're going to see I've now got a lot of connections going on here. I've got one to WebSphere, I've got a couple to my self-host, the SMX and the WCF web servers, actually they're up here, to my IIS host, and one is active, the one we're driving load against right now is this. But I just established these connection points, okay? This comes back with two types of connections. A self-host program can talk over HTTP and XML encoding, but with WCF, it can also talk TCP binary. With one programming model, we replace what was called .NET binary remoting. WCF consolidates the programming model for all types of remote invocation into one programming model, one web service programming model, and you can flip this to .NET binary remoting with no code change whatsoever. And I'm about to do that here.
Very cool.
And we're going to see what happens to performance when we stop serializing to XML and we actually go into this TCP binary connector. So let me go to my configuration tab. Now, again, you wouldn't do this live, and you'd probably stop the test and then reconfigure it to go over a different protocol. But I'm going to go ahead and be wild here and give this a shot. I haven't done this before, actually, live. And we're going to go TCP web service, and that's going to change my connection to the self-host and to the TCP binding all in one shot across two clustered web servers. Let's see if this is going to take. Okay, I'm going to go back to my connections tab. We might get a couple of closed connection errors. I'm not sure. But we're going to see now that the active connection in green is indeed my net TCP binding. You can't read that, but it says net TCP. It tells you your binding name. And we're now talking to a completely different service host hosting the business service tier over a completely different protocol and a different encoding standard, binary instead of XML, without no code change. Again, one programming model, one config option, and config web is just letting me change the which way we connect up. And so we're going to take a look at something here. Look at our perfmon. Look what's going on here in Mercury. We actually didn't get any errors, so my live change worked.
Nice.
Not recommended at home, but what happened? Look at our throughput. It's going through the roof here. We are no longer bottlenecked on IIS as a single service host, because with TCP binary and with self-hosting, we actually get more performance out of this. We're not having to serialize into XML. Mm-hmm. All right. The important thing to keep in mind for interop, even though we're going binary, this self-host program is simultaneously listening over HTTP and XML. It can still receive requests from Java clients, from WebSphere, from anything on the non-Microsoft platforms. But .NET clients can connect up in this binary mode. If you know you're going .NET to .NET, they can go into .NET binary mode over TCP and get this performance advantage, but you're not sacrificing any interop whatsoever because it's still listening on the XML HTTP endpoint for other clients.
Let's talk about now, why couldn't another, since it's a binary format, why couldn't I talk to it from Java?
Well,
right now this is a .NET binary format, just like Java has some binary formats, like for EJBs, and this is a binary representation of .NET on the wire, .NET objects on the wire. XML right now is kind of the, we'll call it the Switzerland of the world, in that it's the one standard when you serialize into text that everybody can then take that XML off the wire and reconstruct their native binary objects out of it. That's how it works. You serialize into text, everything understands text, it reads the XML based on the SOAP standards and reconstructs its native binary objects. With binary serialization, the representation on the wire doesn't have to be serialized all the way out to text. It can be a native representation on the wire that can be very quickly reconstructed into .NET objects on the remote server.
Absolutely.
And that's why you get the performance advantage that you're seeing here when you go with .NET binary remote. Look, we've kicked up to 1,200 TPS.
Yeah.
And look at our response times. They've dropped from 1 second, as soon as I made that change, all the way back down to less than a second.
Nice.
Okay? Now, look at our web server. I want you to notice something that a lot of people get confused by when they first start doing benchmark capacity planning. Well, why if I'm doing more here and it's more efficient, why am I getting higher all of a sudden? Remember, these guys were down here, CPU-wise, and now my web servers are almost 100% saturated. Mm-hmm. All right, well, why did that happen? I'm servicing more requests, right? Yeah. I don't have, these guys aren't in wait states anymore. They're completely non-bottlenecked by the back-end middle tier, so it's doing exactly what they should be doing. They're servicing more requests, which of course takes more CPU cycles, and I've essentially shifted my bottleneck now. Because I'm so efficient over here, let's take a look. Because I'm so efficient, and you can see the logins happening live here in my self-host program. So you can see I'm displaying the login information that the scripts are driving. You just get some, you know, information going on. And I'll minimize that. Well, actually, we could look at it right here in the Perfmon counter. Or I could minimize that and look at the main one. Look at how this guy fell. He's now not the bottleneck anymore. He's so efficient with this TCP binary serialization.
Yeah.
He's so efficient, he can handle all the requests from those web servers. And therefore, they're having to work harder because they're servicing more concurrent requests, never in a wait state, to get that higher TPS. So in general, as your TPS increases, because you don't have bottlenecks, you want your CPU utilization to go up to 100%. The more users you put on the system, the more TPS you get, the more your CPU will climb. You know you have a bottleneck in a system when your CPU on one tier isn't at 100%. We keep adding users, and the more users you add, one of your tiers, your CPU utilization just doesn't continue to rise. It stays at a certain level. That means they're in a wait state for something. Maybe it's the database, maybe it's a network, maybe it's a memory bottleneck, maybe it's your remote service bottleneck like we had before. Mm-hmm. When you remove that bottleneck, then they're going to be not in a wait state. They're going to be able to service those requests, and they're going to utilize that CPU power, and we're going to get more throughput out of the system. So this is a good thing that just happened.
Absolutely, right? Of course.
And that means I can drive more load.
Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and add some more users here. And let's crank up another, let's do 400. And now what we're going to expect to see is these guys are going to become the bottleneck. Right? Just by changing a transport protocol and encoding standard, I removed the bottleneck, but also because it's now so efficient on the service tier, on the remote service tier, my bottleneck is now going to become the capacity of my web servers. And so what I would do now to increase the capacity of my system further is not add another service host, but add another web server to the farm.
Exactly.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So now you can see I've hit my bottleneck, and here come my requests queued back in. Down here, this white line on both my servers, they're beginning to queue requests, but because I've hit essentially 100% CPU load on my web servers.
So just throw another box in the cluster.
Another box in the cluster. And we're getting up here just to cap out here with two web servers. We're getting up to about 1,400 TPS. Right, this is
nice.
On three servers. That's a lot of TPS, right?
Yeah.
I'd say this isn't a trivial application. It is doing transactions on the database, serialization of large objects. You know, everything you'd get in a real app is kind of baked into the stock trader app. So this isn't like a trivial scenario going on here. So the other thing to note is that in the benchmark results that we've published on the web, which you can get at the MSDN Stock Trader site, we have to actually have four to saturate our single web service host. We have to have four 2PROC web servers running, and we will actually be able to get up to 2,400 TPS in that config with one web service host doing all the database interactions and all the lifting on the web service side, which is pretty remarkable, actually, I think, considering it's a 1 second think time. So that's 2,400 concurrent users
hammering these web servers, hammering the database with a 1 second think time. And in the real world, that think time is probably going to be, again, 5 or 6 seconds. So it's probably more like a real load of 6,000 or 7,000 concurrent users hitting this system doing all of that work at once.
Wow.
Just across one service host, but 4 2-proc blades servicing my my websites.
Nice.
All right. So now I'm just going to shut down the benchmark here for a second. We capped out here with 2 web servers at about 1,400 TPS. And I'm going to do one more mode now. And I'm going to show you a couple things. Okay. If we go back to ConfigWeb, and we take a look at all our connections being tracked, and we see our defined nodes here, I'm going to remove this as a node. Okay. So let's go back to the top, go to my connections tab, and I don't want to connect up to this particular service host anymore. So I'm going to go ahead and remove all of his endpoints. I'm going to purge them from the repository. Okay. That's going to accomplish a purge, and now I don't have connections to that host anymore. And at the same time, let's go ahead and clean this up as well. Let's purge my connections to my IIS host, because I don't really need to be connected up to him anymore. And I'll just go ahead and get rid of my ASMX endpoint. And now we're just connected up to WebSphere, but it's not active. Yeah, that connection's not active, which is fine. And what I want to do is I'm going to change the mode here. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to shut down my web servers on these two. I'm going to make these the business service tier. Let's go ahead and shut these guys down. That guy. That guy. And actually, I'll do a hard stop so we don't actually start it. Not even yet running, okay? So now I'm not running the web app here anymore. And in fact, if I was trying to connect to this guy, I wouldn't be able to, so we'll go to here. And we'll connect up to this. And we'll take a look at ConfigWeb. Close out of that. Let's go to ConfigWeb again. Log in as the administrator. Better turn my cell phone off. You probably can't even hear that.
We'll that. That's an old school phone.
It is an old
school. Smartphone for you.
Sorry, I'm kind of a server guy. And we'll see that we don't have any connections yet because we're booted up on a node that we just deleted all the connections to, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and boot up the self-host program. Oh, I want to just one brief interlude. As a benchmark app, this comes with a data loader, okay? So this allows me, after I run a benchmark, to reset my database and delete everything new that was added to the database so I can start the benchmark again.
Nice.
It also allows me to load up huge data loads. It's going to delete all the new users and all the new orders so I get a clean starting point for the next benchmark. So he's ready to start. But notice here you can specify how many users you want to load up, and this will load very quickly, and you can get the statistics as to what's loaded in your database. Okay. Now, because this app runs against different databases, we've got data loaders in here for Oracle, looks the same, and we've got a data loader, because you can run this with IBM WebSphere against DB2. So there's 3 data loaders, use .NET to connect up to either DB2, Oracle, or SQL Server that'll let you load the databases with a data load, delete new users, and things of that nature. So I just deleted them out of SQL Server, because that's what I'm using as my back end right now. And I'm going to launch Business Services over here, that same self-host program. And here he is booting up. And I'm going to launch one over. Well, actually, let's leave him going right there just for now. And we'll let him run. And we'll look at our performance monitor. And let's go to ConfigWeb here and establish a connection point. So I've got my connection to WebSphere, which I'm not using. But I'm going to go here. And I'm going to go to this box where I just booted him up. It's DL380-2. And connect up to this particular cell host, and I'll have a connection back. Now I'm running business services on my 2-proc box. Okay? And that's good. I've got my connections going here to my cell host. And NetTCP, PC binary. And notice he understood that that guy's still running it. Now that's interesting. I didn't close that guy down, so I've actually got connections to this one as well. Now I'm going to go ahead and shut him down. I don't want him running over there. We'll close out. Now, when we close out of a node, we'll just take a look at this. We'll just refresh this page. I just closed out
of a node that I had active connections to, and we'll see this now show up as red, right? That's our kind of our health monitoring. I essentially did a graceful close, so you can crash it as well as a failover. But this is now showing me I've got connections to a node that's now not active, and if I want, I can go ahead and delete those connections. They're organized by binding. That's why they're not they're showing up in out of sequence there. It's kind of by design. We'll return our connection page, and now we're kind of happy again just going in this one. Okay. So let's go over here to Mercury. Let's change our script. And instead of going to the two web servers, let's actually now make the web server where we were running business services before. And just go to him. Nobody else. So that looks about right to me. Close that. Save the script. And let's go ahead and start up 100 users. So this time, what's going to get the load? All of these clients are driving load against what I was running, this service, now running the web app. They're going to run the web app on that tier, and they're going to be connecting up to business services on this tier.
Okay.
Which we hopefully will see in a second, if I clean the database correctly, which apparently I didn't do. Okay. Let's just do a quick stop.